Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, this is the second to last session on Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. We've been talking about deities and temples. So, we may probably get this section finished this morning, and then maybe this evening we can do just a general question and answer session. And then anybody that has any topic that they'd like to bring up, they can feel free to ask. Okay, so we'll go on then with Prabhupada's different deity leelas. Last night we were talking about Vrindavan and Prabhupada's attention to the management there, and how he had adjusted, he was calculating even the what it cost to make one puri. This is how he was doing his management, that he felt the devotees were spending far too much money on the monthly budget. He cut them down from about 9,000 rupees to a month to 1,000. Were you there? You were there, Matt, right? September, 76. And Prabhupada ordered them, cut it down to 1,000 maximum. And at that time, the deities, there's 10 big deities on the three altars, and each deity was getting their own separate plate. But then Prabhupada decided to cut that back to 6 plates, 2 plates for each altar, instead of 10 plates. And he and Bhagaji, they sat down and they calculated how much flour and ghee it takes to make one puri. And then they calculated so many puris per plate, and in this way he was making the budget. So this is how you have to manage. So going on with that, another problem I'd mentioned briefly last night was that the devotees were always getting cheated when they bought flowers. You know, the flower walla would the flower waller would come and they would got my microphone entangled in the flowers. He would sell the flowers by the weight, but he would always put, you know, bricks and lumps of earth in the bottom of the basket to make it heavier, and the devotees just didn't seem to notice these things. Or, you know, he would bring old flowers from 2 or 3 days that he couldn't sell anymore, and he would give them to the devotees, put a few fresh ones on the top to make it look nice, and underneath it was all old. So the quality of the garlands was quite poor. And sometimes when Prabhupada greeted the deities, the deities didn't even have a garland on, and Prabhupada would get quite disturbed about that. So on September the 8th, 1976, each morning when Prabhupada greets the deities, he takes particular note of the flowers that are offered for their lordship's garlands. He has complained several times about the poor quality of the flowers, and even worse, on occasion, some garlands are missing when the curtains open. Management is a constant headache for Srila Prabhupada, but in his class this morning, he made it clear that there is a difference between spiritual and material anxiety. And I saw Prabhupada would always get in anxiety whenever he went to Vrindavan, especially about the management. He was very concerned how things were being run there. So, September the 24th, this is a couple of weeks later. Several times over the last few weeks, Prabhupada has been disturbed by the poor quality of flowers on the deity garlands, and the fact that the deities sometimes don't have garlands on them when they're open for the darshan. When Prabhupada greeted them this morning, he saw that Sri Sri Krishna Balaram yet again had no garlands. Openly aggravated, he half turned to Akshayananda Swami and he told him sternly, "This is another farce." He was so troubled by the poor standard of worship that he dedicated most of his class to talking on the topic. Although his tone was dispassionate and objective, showing no traces of the flash of anger that he had displayed earlier, he gave a very strong warning to the devotees about the consequences of inattention and neglect. He started out by saying that human life begins with the practice of religion, but nowadays there are organized movements such as communism to stop it. Yet, he said, in one way they cannot be blamed. Because the guardians of the religious system, Prabhupada told us, they are fallen. Just like immediately our Subhavilas Prabhu, he was a devotee from Canada, was asking me that, we have seen so many temples, why are they so neglected? Is that not your question? And why they should not, neglect it? Mostly, the temples, they have become simply a means of livelihood. That is the defect. Temple is not meant for means of livelihood. Then it will deteriorate. How long can you falsely worship the deity and make a show of the arati? You cannot go on for a very long time. That is not possible. You'll be disgusted. Unless there is some feeling, bhava, that here is Krishna. Krishna has very kindly come to receive, to take and accept my humble service. He is so great that he cannot be approached by a person like me. Ano aniyam mahato mahiyan. Prabhupada explained that we cannot worship Krishna in his universal aspect. And therefore, he said, he is so kind that he has appeared before you in this temple so that you can touch him actually. You can serve him. You can dress him. You can offer him eatables. This is Archa Vigraha, deity. Archa Vishnu Shila Dihi. Krishna has appeared. So we are not so elevated like Nanda Maharaj or Yasoda. We are just beginners. So we do not know what is Krishna. We cannot see Krishna. Either is Virat Murti or is or this Murti. So what can we see? We can see simply stone, wood or material things. So when Krishna appears to be seen by you, and he appears like a stone statue, he is not a stone statue. Don't think like that. Therefore, we must learn how to see Krishna. We should not think that here is a stone statue. As soon as we think of stone statue, then this feeling of bhava, that will be lost. So the answer is that if we establish some temple and deity and take it as a means of livelihood, then everything is lost. So at least we Indians, we are trained up like that. Not only trained up, but we are born devotees. Anyone who has taken his birth in India, that is a special facility. In their previous births, they had performed many austerities, much austerities. Even the demigods, they desire also to take a birth in India to get this opportunity. So India means this planet, Bharat Varsha. They're not talking about that one little tract of land there. So this planet, Bharat Varsha, so there is a good opportunity. So if we think that, oh, here is a stone statue, then it will not prolong for many days. Galagraha, no more vigraha, but galagraha. Suppose I have established this temple now, under my direction, my disciples, they're worshipping vigraha. Vigraha means the form of the Lord, Rupa. But if there is no following of the regulative principles, then after my death it will be galagraha, a burden. That, oh, our rascal Guru Maharaj, he has established this temple and we have to worship early rising in the morning. All botheration. So that is called galagraha, a burden. Oh, he has left us with a burden. So this is the risk. Then such a big temple will be mismanaged. And you'll find that, oh, this is breaking, this is unclean, there is no attention. So then that will be the mood. This is called galagraha. The rascal has given us a burden. So it is very difficult. If we have lost that feeling that here is Krishna, here is a chance to serve him. Sri Vigrahara Dananichanana Sringaratan Mandirama Janado. Therefore we are very much vigilant. Oh, why did you not do this? Why did you not do this? So as soon as the feeling of devotional service will be lost, then this temple will be a burden. This is the way. It will be such a big temple to manage, and it will become a great burden. So they are feeling burden, and therefore they don't mind if somewhere it is broken sometimes. Alright, whatever money we've got, let us eat first of all. This is the position. Vigraha and Galagraha. So you should understand. If we forget that here is Krishna, personally present, oh, we have to receive him very nicely. We have to give him food and nice dress. Then it is service. And as soon as that feeling comes that, oh, here is simply stone idol, then they say sometimes idol worship. Oh, we have been instructed to dress him, to give him. Oh, this is a botheration. Then all will be finished. Finished. So this has come everywhere. I have seen in Nasik so many big temples, and there is no pujari, and the dogs are passing stool in the temple. I also saw that one time. I went down south, I think, to Shivakasi, and we went in one of the temples there, and dogs are everywhere, and passing stool, and nobody caring, nothing like that. Prabhupada said that this same present, this same problem was also present in the West. The churches are derelict, and he had personally observed that on Sundays, only the caretaker and a few old women are attending. Many of these disused churches were up for sale, but even then the priests have been reluctant to sell them to us. One church, he's talking about Toronto, we'd just been there in the summer. The priest said, I shall set fire to this church, but I still will not give it to Bhaktivedanta Swami. He'd rather burn it to the ground than give it to us. Prabhupada grinned, and this Jai Shri Shri Radha Landanishwara Ki Jai. And as everyone laughed, he went on. So this Toronto church was like that also. And in Melbourne, there, the sale condition was that, oh, you have to dismantle this church building. So we said, why? He said, if you utilize as a temple, then we shall not sell it to you. So they refused. There was a big property. It covered one whole city block. It was a convent, actually. Very well equipped, you know. Wonderful living quarters for, you know, about 100 people. Complete commercial laundry. And they had a beautiful building. And in that building, up on the top floor, there was a very, very nice, like a temple room. They were using it as their church. And it was very gorgeously decorated. You know, very nice domed ceiling and everything, and stained glass windows. Beautiful. So it was an ideal temple. But when we went there to negotiate the sale of the property, then they said they only wanted to sell half the property, and the other half they wanted to sell for commercial purposes. But even that half would have been very good for us. But they said, we're going to split it right down the middle of the main building, right? Through where the church is, yeah? Where they were, the room they were using for the church. It's going to be split right down the middle and knocked off. Why? So that we can't use it. Yeah? Because we're idol worshippers. So you're not going to despoil our church. Even we're selling it to you. But we'll make sure that you can't use it. So that mentality, Prabhupada said. So they refused. So they did not like that, oh, this Krishna consciousness movement will purchase our churches and install Radha Krishna deity. They did not like that. So despite his injection of a little humor, Prabhupada remained very serious about the problems that he has detected here, exemplified by the failure of the pujaris to offer nice garlands to the deities. He analyzed the mentality behind it, and he spelled out the consequences in strikingly frank terms. So not only the churches in the Western countries, here also. As soon as you will lose the spirit of service, then this temple will become a big go-down. Go-down in India means a warehouse. So that's all. No more temple. So we should maintain that service spirit. Therefore we are so much particular. Why fresh flower is not there? If you think, oh, here is a stone statue, what is the meaning of a fresh flower or old flower? We have to give some flower, that's all. But no, there should be the feeling that here is Krishna. We must give him fresh flowers. Just like I'm a living man, if you give me a fresh flower, and if you bring some garbage, if you give it to me, shall I be pleased? Do you think? So this feeling is losing even in the beginning, that, oh, we shall satisfy this statue with some rubbish, garbage flowers. He's not going to protest. Yes, he will not protest, but your life will be finished. That protest will come like that. And as soon as you lose that feeling, Baba, Buddha Baba Samamvitaha. So who can worship Krishna? Where there is bhava, stayi bhava. So this has been discussed in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What is bhava? But if you have no bhava, then you are on the material, canister adhikari platform. Simply a show. So a show cannot go on for many days. A show will be finished very soon. So that was a very, very heavy warning. Prabhupada said, if you don't have that feeling, the whole temple will become a go-down. That's all. A warehouse. And the deity is just some troublesome. Alright, put a few, you know, bits and pieces on here, let people come, and give some money, and we shall eat and sleep. That's all. And the deity is just some statue. That's all. People have some sentiment. Alright, keep the statue, and let them come. Take the money off them. And I told this story about the visit that we had to Shakti Gopal. I'll mention it again. It's worth repeating. Now, this was in early 1977 in January. We had been to Jagannath Puri on the 25th and 26th. And we were returning on the 26th evening to Bhubaneswar, where Prabhupada was going to do the foundation stone ceremony for the temple there. So halfway between Puri and Bhubaneswar, there's the town or village of Shakti Gopal. And that deity of Shakti Gopal is the same deity that's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that whole story there. So somehow or another, at some point, he came up to Orissa. So I don't know exactly how long, you know, he's been worshipped, maybe, what, 600, 700, 800 years? Anyway, I mean, you know, wonderful deity. So we're coming into Shakti Gopal. So then, you know, because we were enthusiastic, Prabhupada said, all right, let's go and visit. Now, a few days before, Guru Kripa and his men, and Nam Hattapati, they had gone there and visited. And they'd been once or twice, there'd been no problem. But then the last time that they'd gone there, then there was some agitation from the Pujaris that you, Malachas, Westerners, you're not allowed here. So there was some argument. So now we were coming with Srila Prabhupada. So anyway, we drove in, and there was a gateway and a big sign, and said this is the temple of the famous Shakti Gopal deity, and no money charged for darshan. So then I was thinking, immediately I was thinking, well, if you don't charge any money, why do you have to advertise it? Just don't charge, that's all. Let people come and have a darshan, and don't say anything. But you're saying no money charged, that means your mind is on money. Yeah? So anyway, we went there, and the design of the temple was that you had to, there was like a front plinth, like a mandap, darshan mandap, and steps leading up to it. And then at the sides, there was, on the ground level, there were some other rooms. And they had some utsav deities there. Utsav deity means the ones that they just take out on the festival occasions. Not the main deity, but another festival deity. So we started to go up onto the main darshan area, and immediately they said, no, no, go around the side, go around the side. Okay, so Prabhupada walked around the side. There was a group of us there, six or ten of us, something like that. So we went around the side, thinking, you know, and then we should go up, you know, from the side steps. But then they showed us, oh, here is a temple, little rooms with these utsav deities. Alright, we had a look. Then Prabhupada turned to go up the steps onto the main darshan area. And then immediately all the two or three pujaris, they came and stood on the steps to block us. So Prabhupada got up one or two steps and then they were standing there, they wouldn't move. And then one or two, I saw one of them had a lati and like this. So then, you know, there was immediately an agitation. And Guru Kripa and his men, they were getting very annoyed. So they started moving forward, and the pujaris, you know, were getting ready. And then some man came, I guess he was the head pujari. He looked, he saw there's some disturbance, but then he saw in the middle, we were saying, you know, this is our guru, you can't stop him. So he saw Prabhupada was there, and immediately he ordered the other men to stand aside. And then, you know, he let us go up. So that was, you know, already some agitation. We went up, and then, you know, the man was nice, so he took Prabhupada right inside the deity room. It's a very typical kind of South Indian style deity room. Very small, you know, like a small chamber. And Shakti Gopal, he's standing there, he's 6 feet tall, very big deity. And he's in the middle there, and that's all there is. So, yeah, you remember 3-4 people can squeeze inside. So Prabhupada went in, so myself and Gopal Krishna and Guru Kripa, we We immediately jammed in behind Prabhupada so that we could get in. And so, you know, because Prabhupada went in, the pujari couldn't say anything, you know, for us going in. So we all kind of crammed in. And Prabhupada offered his obeisance. Says, I saw on the floor there was water and it was dirty and like that. And then, you know, the deity himself was not dressed very nicely, very simple. And no flower garland, you know, like that. So then Prabhupada stood and, you know, did his pranams. And after about 30 seconds, he said, all right, so now shall we go? So then we turned to go. So then Guru, all the pujaris had all crowded around at the entrance. So then Guru Kripa said we should give them some donation. So then Prabhupada said, all right, how much? So Guru Kripa handed him a 50 rupee note, which, you know, for Prabhupada, that was a lot. If he went to visit a temple, he might give 5 rupees or something, just as a token. But that, you know, I was thinking, wow, he's giving him 50 rupees to give. That's, you know. So Prabhupada took the note from Guru Kripa and then he handed it over to this head pujari. So as he's handing it over, all the others are looking over to try to see how much he's giving. So then they say, 50 rupees. He's only giving 50 rupees. Give more. You have to give more. And they started yelling at Prabhupada, give more. Right in front of the deity. It was really, really distasteful, to say the least. So Prabhupada just completely ignored him and he just walked straight out. He didn't look at them. He didn't say anything to them. He just walked straight out. And we followed him. So as we're going out, then they're running after us. Give more, you have to give more, like this. And they're harassing the Western devotees for money. So we went along and then down the steps. And then I saw this man coming up. He had a plate with these big luglu kind of, you know, that dry kind of laddu that they make in India? He had the big ones. What's it called?
Crumbly one.
Huh? Yeah, that yellowy kind. You know, big. Anyway, like tennis balls. So I thought, well, at least, you know, they're going to come and give us some prasadam. So the guy comes up and he breaks off a little tiny piece and he says, 20 rupees. Like that. So we walked straight past. And he also shouting, no, come on, you have to give, like this. So the car was there in the courtyard. Prabhupada got in the car. We jumped in with him. We started to drive off and one of them, he was so shameless, he ran after the car yelling and, you know, you have to give more, stop, give more money, like this. We just went. Then Prabhupada, all this time, he didn't say a word. He was just very silent and sober. Then once we got out of the compound and back on the road down to Bhubaneswar, he just made one simple comment. He said, the Shakshi Gopal deity is not worshipped properly. That was it. So we never went back. But anyway, that is the unfortunate condition. That the deity is simply a means of making money. That's all. And there was another incident, actually. I remember, and I should have put this in, actually. I've just remembered about this. Let me just write this down before I forget. In 1976, Lokanath Swami, he had 77. Lokanath Maharaj has started his bullock cart traveling Sankirtan party from Vrindavan around September, October time. And then they'd gone off, you know, on a tour. So they were headed off eventually to get to Mayapur for the festival. So in 77, he actually turned up just before Gopunima with his party. They had, you know, tried to stop at different temples on the way in. So they had stopped, I think, at one Gaudiya Math temple, just, you know, within the Mayapur precinct there before coming to our temple the next morning. So he gave a same report that as soon as they arrived immediately, you know, some money and everything was demanded and like that. So then Prabhupada quoted this Bengali saying from his Guru Maharaj, that they're taking the Shalagram Shila, it's a stone, they're taking the Shalagram Shila and breaking nuts. Right? I mean, nuts you can eat. So you take the Shalagram Shila, it's just a stone, you break nuts with it so you can eat. So this is what they're doing. They're showing the deity, but just simply for filling their belly, like that. Let me just... Okay. 1977. All right, so let's see. Other deities. So that was Vrindavan. Now, other deities that, of course... this is a bit jumbled up, actually. I don't know why. But anyway, let's see. So, you know, it's a form of impersonalism. They don't see the deity as the Supreme Lord himself. It's just some, you know, stone statue. So also, the Mayavadis, they see in the same way. Sometimes you get the Mayavadis, they actually worship deities. But their real intention is different. So, Kurukshetra, 1975, December the 1st. So I've been with Prabhupada about 4 days at this point. Three, four days in Delhi. And this was my first trip with him. So we went from Delhi, we drove up to Kurukshetra. And Prabhupada had gone there to see some land, to see about starting up a Varnashram college. Ambarish Prabhu was with us, Chaitaguru was also. So myself, Chaitaguru and Ambarish were in one car, and Prabhupada, Gopal Krishna, and Hansaduta, with a driver, they were in the front car. It took about 3 hours to get there. And we were greeted by Gulzarilal Nanda. He'd been a former president and an acting prime minister of India. He'd gotten like about $1.5 million as a grant. He'd retired from politics and he was developing Kurukshetra. So he took us all around in the morning, around the Brahma Sarovar area. Brahma Sarovar is the biggest of the bathing tanks there. It's about 2/3 of a mile long and 1/3 of a mile across. And he was paving it all around and putting steps in and proper bathing facilities for ladies, enclosed like that. They were also in the area putting in agricultural systems, irrigation. They had a Goshala that we went to visit. They had an Ayurvedic pharmacy. They were making their own Ayurvedic medicines. And then in the afternoon, Prabhupada, after lunch, he was taken to the university where he was hoping to put some of his books in there. So I remember actually when Prabhupada knocked off for lunch, they'd put us up in a motel, and Prabhupada went out into the back garden to have his noontime massage. So Nandaji came, and he was sitting on a chair. I was massaging Prabhupada, sitting on a mat on the ground. And they started talking and chatting. So then at one point, Prabhupada, you know, quoted from Bhagavad Gita, the first verse, which, this, you know, describes about Vivasvan and Ichvaku and Manu, like that. Prabhupada was explaining, you know, the origins of the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. So when Prabhupada talked about Vivasvan, the sun god, as being an actual person, then Nandaji was surprised. Now this is a man who's, you know, developing Kurukshetra. He's a Gandhian, supposedly a follower of the Bhagavad Gita. Kurukshetra, Krishna came there and spoke the Bhagavad Gita there. But when Prabhupada quoted the Bhagavad Gita to him, and it mentioned, you know, a demigod, the sun god, he was puzzled. He said, you know, but do you mean that, you know, he's a real person? Prabhupada said, yes, of course. Otherwise, why would Krishna have mentioned him? And then it was very clear that they took it allegorically, but he didn't take it literally. So these men were supposed to be propagating Bhagavad Gita, but they don't believe that Krishna is a real person. They don't believe in the demigods. They don't believe, you know, in the personal aspects of the absolute truth. They're all Mayavadis. Anyway, so they had that chat. That kind of stuck out in my mind. I was listening as I was massaging. So then later on, after they came back from the university, that was it. Nanda took his leave, and then we were supposed to drive back to Delhi. But Prabhupada had not really seen, you know, what he was looking for in that Brahma Sarovar area. And there was another area, which is about 7 kilometers further on, called Jyotisar. And Jyotisar actually was said to be the place, you know, where they say Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. So then Prabhupada talked with Harikesh and Yeah, Harikesh, sorry, he came with us also. Hazarduda, Harikesh, Scott Balkrishna, and Ambarish. So we all decided, yeah, let's go to Jyotisar. Now we're here, we'll have a look and see what's there. So off we went. And when we arrived there, it's kind of a small place, but it was very nice, very peaceful. There was just a dirt road leading to it. It wasn't developed, and it wasn't within, you know, the scheme that Nanda was doing for Brahma Sarova. It was kind of a neglected area to some extent. But there was, you know, a nice little kund there, like a small lake, and a few small temples. So the main feature was out in the open, under the spreading arms of a large banyan tree. The tree is said to have been there since the time of the battle, 5,000 years ago. There, encased in a metal and glass house, we came upon a half-life-sized deity of Krishna and Arjuna on a chariot, marble, white marble. Arjuna was sitting cross-legged in the back of the chariot with his palms together, and Krishna, who was painted blue, sat on the front, half-turning to Arjuna. His left hand held the reins of four horses, and his right hand was raised with the thumb and forefinger forming a circle in the classic mudra signifying the exchange of spiritual knowledge. Prabhupada walked about, and he gave the entire area a thorough inspection. After 10 minutes, he asked us what we thought about it. Free from the previous constraints imposed upon it, imposed by our status as guests, everyone expressed their enthusiasm. We unanimously concluded that it seemed as if this was the main pilgrimage site. We all sensed the spiritual vibrancy of the area. A deep sense of timeless wisdom and serenity seemed to permeate the atmosphere. Harikesh put it very succinctly. The other place was like the heavenly planets, but this place is Vaikuntha. So Prabhupada smiled, and he said, yes, so we should build a temple of Krishna and Arjuna here. And at Brahma Sarova, we can build another temple for Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra, because they went there to bathe during the solar eclipse. So Chaitaguru was chosen to negotiate with Nandaji for the land. Prabhupada also requested him to try and get some land donated at Jyotisar. So one of the things was that Prabhupada went there, you know, intending to get Nanda to give us a piece of land so that we could, you know, help with the development. But Nanda made it very clear that he was selling the land. So he showed us two or three plots. So Prabhupada was, you know, kind of very cautious. He didn't say, yes, we'll take anything. He told Akshayananda, now you come back during the rainy season, you look at these different plots and see if they're underwater or not, and like that. He was being very cautious. But the real thing was that he didn't want to actually have to buy the land. So anyway, he told Chaitaguru, now you can negotiate for that Brahma Sarova land. And this Jyotisar, you see if you can get some land donated to us, and we shall build a Krishna and Arjuna temple here. So on the way back, Prabhupada candidly remarked about the Kurukshetra development. He said, they call it Manavadharm. That was the organization that Nanda was running. Manavadharm, which means religious actions for humanity. He said, I call it Pashudharm. Pashu is animal. 1.5 crores of rupees have been spent. They erect a big statue for birds to pass stool on of Nandaji, but they have not installed one single deity. So as soon as we arrived there, there's this huge statue of Nanda, right? He's the guy who's developed the place. So immediately he had his own statue put up there. So Prabhupada said, he put this big statue, 15 feet high, of Nanda, so crows can pass stool on it. But he said, not one single deity. So this is their mentality. And similarly, we had the same experience. At the end of 1976, we had gone to Wardha. You were there, right? Did you come to Wardha? Yeah. And there was this meeting, the Gita Pratishthan. There's an organization that had been set up by people like Ramkrishna Bajaj. In India, you see Bajaj scooters, Bajaj fans, all kinds of things. That man. So he owned this. I mean, he was a big industrialist, but they were all supporters of Gandhi. Or at least their fathers had been, and they were carrying on the tradition.
So he was there, Sriman Narayan was there, he was a contemporary of Gandhi's to some extent. He had been the first chief minister of Gujarat, you know, when India took independence. So there's some big people there. And they had invited the leaders from many different spiritual organizations in India to come for this three-day meeting to discuss how to popularize the Bhagavad Gita in India, because the feeling was that India's losing its spirituality and they should do something to try to counter that. So propagation of Bhagavad Gita, they thought that would be, you know, one means. So they had this Gita Pratishthan. So Prabhupada had been invited. He was actually the main person. I mean, he was much more prominent than any of the other spiritual leaders that had been invited. The only other one that was of any prominence was Swami Chidananda, who was from the Divine Life Society. And so we'd gone there on from Hyderabad. We went by train overnight, and we arrived in Wardha on December the 18th. Then that evening, Prabhupada had met with this man, Vinod Bhave. Vinod Bhave was a contemporary of Gandhi. He was about, he must have been in his late 80s when we met him. He was stone deaf. And he was, you know, kind of revered in India as being, you know, one of the last big spiritual leaders. You know, people used, all the big politicians, they would all go and see him, take advice from him. He was in, you know, similar thing to what Gandhi was doing. He had done fasts, you know, so-called up until death to stop cow killing and all these kinds of things. But he was, of course, a big Mayavadi. Anyway, so Prabhupada met with him the first evening that we went there. And then the next day, then they had the opening ceremony, which was quite funny because they had Bhave on the stage. He was like the opening speech. And then they had time allotted for Srila Prabhupada and for Swami Chidananda. So they were the three that were on the stage. Everybody else was sitting on the ground. So Prabhupada knew all these people. They're all Mayavadis. So several weeks before we went there, Giriraj had written to Prabhupada and said that, now if you want to have a meeting with Vinod Bhave, you have to write everything down because he's stone deaf, you can't hear a thing. So you have to write it all down if you want any points to be discussed. So Prabhupada was meeting with Jagadish, who was his secretary, practically every day for about a week and a half before we went there. And he made up this list of about 21 or 22 different questions, which he was... He asked the question and then he was answering it with a verse and a purport, his own purports from the Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, some samples of that would be like, what was Arjuna's way of understanding Bhagavad Gita? And then he'd answer that with a verse from Bhagavad Gita and his purport. And he had Jagadish read the purports out and then he added some extra things to his own purports as well. So Jagadish was busy typing all this stuff out and he ended up with a list. There were other things like modern civilization means digging your own grave. And service to man is service to God is a modern day fallacy. So like this, he was going over all these popular ideas that are current in India that have been propagated by the Mayavadis. And the whole thing was to, you know, state very directly and clearly that you can only preach the Bhagavad Gita if you're actually following Arjuna. How did Arjuna accept Krishna? Yeah, what was his understanding of the Bhagavad Gita? You know, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you have to surrender to him. So the whole thing was an essay, but written in this question and answer format. And it hasn't been published yet, but that will be coming out in my next volume of my diary. I have the whole thing still, but nobody's published it so far, except in Indonesia. We did, right? That the answer, Bhagavad Gita, the answer to all questions. Anyway, so Prabhupada had been preparing, you know, for this whole, you know, he's going into a den of Mayavadis, basically. That's the way he saw it. So he got this whole thing prepared. Anyway, so the second day, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, sorry, I'll finish off the opening ceremony. So Vinod Bhave spoke for about 5 or 10 minutes, just some simple stuff, nothing philosophical. And then he, you know, handed over the mic to Srila Prabhupada. So then there was maybe about 45 minutes or something before the end of that session. Then we were all going to go for lunch. So Prabhupada was on one side, Bhave was in the middle, and Chidananda was on the other side, on the stage. So Prabhupada got the microphone. And then he spoke in Hindi, but I could tell what he was saying. The whole thing was just blasting them, you know, about how can you preach Bhagavad Gita if you don't accept who Krishna is? If you don't believe Krishna is a person, then what right have you got to speak on the Bhagavad Gita? You have to, you know, accept Bhagavad Gita in the same way that Arjuna did. And he's going on and on and on and hammering this point again and again. So he spoke for about 35 minutes. And I saw Chidananda's on the other side there. He's getting really agitated because all his speaking time is being taken up by Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada didn't care at all. He knew what, you know, what's going on. He just went on and on. He was just going to make his point and make sure that they understood. So right from the very beginning, you know, he got into them. Then he stopped. And then, you know, they gave the microphone to Chidananda. Chidananda was so annoyed, he was practically jumping out of his seat. And then he made this, he couldn't refrain from making this really disparaging comment that, you know, well, I won't speak for very long, like this, because he didn't have very long to speak. He said, because others have taken up all the time. Anyway, he said something for 5 minutes, and then that was it. So on the car, driving back. This was held at Bhave's ashram, actually, which was about 7 kilometers from Wardha, where the main meetings were going to take place. And then 7 kilometers from there, in another direction, there was this Sevagram, which was the village where Gandhi had made his headquarters. And he had his Gandhi ashram there at Sevagram. So it's like a triangle. Bhave's ashram, Wardha, and Sevagram. So we were driving back to Wardha to take lunch. So it just happened that they put Chidananda in the same car as Srila Prabhupada. Right? So myself and Jagadish were in the front with the driver. Prabhupada was in the back next to the window. And Chidananda was next to him. And then there was some other guy there, you know, from another one of the spiritual leaders. So as we're going back, Chidananda starts, you know, I guess he wanted some revenge or something on Srila Prabhupada. He wouldn't stop talking. He was determined. You didn't let me speak on the stage. Now I'm going to speak. So he, you know, he starts telling us about, you know, this so-called wonderful program that Bhave had, where he gets young girls from the age of about 14 onwards, and they come to his ashram, and then they get trained for 7 years. And they learn how to chant the Vishnu Sahasranam. They learn Shastra. And then they have to pick a spot, someplace, some village, in anywhere in India. And that's where they're destined to go. Once they've been trained, they have to go to that village. So they had to learn the local language of the place they're going to. And when they leave the ashram, once they've been trained, they have to walk all the way to wherever it is that they're going. Doesn't matter if it's 1,000 miles or whatever. And when they get there, then the program was that they should gather up all the ladies, and then they should train them how to be clean, how to look after the husband very nicely, and, you know, how to make the home very nice, pleasant place to live. And in this way, the philosophy was that men are by nature very violent, but women by nature are very peaceful and gentle. So when the men have been out working all day long, then if they come back to a nice home, you know, where everything's cooked nicely and it's clean and the atmosphere is very nice, then they'll immediately be gentle and pacified. And this will actually solve all the problems of the world. This was his program, right? And he spent 7 years training these batches of girls. This is the whole aim. And so he was explaining, this is Bhave's wonderful program for transforming India. Prabhupada told him, this is all nonsense. He said, Bhagavad Gita He said, this Bhagavad Gita is for the Rajashis. He said, not for the less intelligent class. He said, this is for the Rajashis. They have to understand the Bhagavad Gita. When the kings understand, then the country actually can be brought up to the right standard. But Chidananda just didn't want to know. He didn't want to hear anything from Prabhupada. He just kept on talking. And then he brought up the usual Mayavadi thing. Just like Prakasananda Saraswati criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was in Benares. That, you're a sannyasi, but why are you simply singing and dancing? All sentiment. Don't you know you have to study, Vedanta Sutra and, be very austere? And why are you singing and dancing? This is all just some useless sentiment. Give it up and become a real sannyasi. Huh? That was the criticism. So this Chidananda, the same thing. As soon as Prabhupada, mentioned about chanting and Bhagavad Gita and this is the real cure, he said, of course, this chanting and dancing, that's nice for the poor people and the less intelligent people. He said, that's nice. You can do that program also. But he was criticizing, you people, you're just sentimentalists, that's all. So at one point I saw Prabhupada, he'd heard enough. The man wasn't going to stop, so he just turned around and looked out of the window, in the opposite direction and completely ignored him for the rest of the trip back into water. Anyway, so that was the kind of scenario. So then, at 5 p.m., Sriman Narayan, who was very friendly and respectful to Srila Prabhupada, he came in a car to escort him to the Gandhi Ashram at Sevagram, which was a village named by Gandhi, not far from Wardha. This ashram was his headquarters for almost 12 years, and it still has no electricity or any modern convenience. The accent was on simple village life and occupation, and the buildings with their mud brick walls and thatched roofs reflected this. So we drove into this big compound, Gandhi Ashram in Sevagram. And as Prabhupada stepped out of his car, he was garlanded with the traditional Gandhian fashion, with a thick loop of spun cotton thread. So instead of giving a garland of flowers, because he was into, whenever he got fried from politics, he would go off to, the Gandhi ashram, his ashram there, and he would sit down and he would just, hand spin cotton on one of these, spindle machines. And that's how he would get some relief. Just forget about everything and spin some cotton thread. So it was a tradition at that ashram that anybody that came, they would be given this big garland of hand-spun cotton. So they gave one to Prabhupada. I actually got that later on, and I saved it. Later on, I gave it to a man that was building a building for us in Mayapur. I don't know whether he still has it or not, but anyway. So this was another means by which Gandhi propagated his idea of everybody spinning and weaving his own cloth in the simple, self-sufficient style of millennia. Because he was promoting, hand-spun cloth. It was a political maneuver against the British that were trying to introduce mill cloth. And at one point, the British, in order to force the Indian people to buy mill cloth from Manchester, right, they went around and they used to cut the thumbs of all the spinners and the weavers in the villages, thousands of them, so that once the thumb is cut, they couldn't use it anymore. It becomes useless. You cut the ligaments, then they couldn't spin anymore. So it was a deliberate, ploy, so that then they could bring in the mill cloth. So Gandhi, he was trying to get, the Indian people to live in the villages. He recognized village life as the best self-sufficient life. So in some things, Prabhupada said he was, he was good. He knew what he was doing. But Gandhi himself has his own spinning wheel, and whenever he felt strained by politics, he would retire for a while to spin cotton. Prabhupada was shown around, and I was surprised to see in the whole compound a complete absence of flower beds and gardens. The whole area was gritted. And despite the claim that it was all based on the Bhagavad Gita, there was not one picture of Krishna anywhere, what to speak about a deity. The whole place gave a very somber mood. we finally ended up at the small cottage where Gandhi himself had stayed, and after a brief look around, we were then led out into an open area. It was by now dusk, and about 50 men and women with small children had gathered to sit in neat rows facing an asana, which was formerly the seat used by Gandhi himself. So they put his seat out at dusk. Everybody sat in rows in this kind of central area. And with just the strums of a veena, they all very slowly and solemnly chanted some slokas from the Bhagavad Gita, and then they sang a couple of bhajans. The whole thing sounded like a death march. I mean, you know, in comparison to our kirtans, you know, it's just very slow and, you know, somber and like this. So Prabhupada sat quietly throughout the whole thing, and at the end, he was then asked to sign the visitor's book. He did so willingly, and he wrote inside. And I have a picture of this also. Prabhupada started writing. He said, "I was fortunate to come to the Gandhi Ashram Sevagram today. It is so quiet and serene. I have requested them to chant the Hare Krishna mantra." It sounds all right, but, you know, because Prabhupada was having a go at them. You know, it's so quiet and serene. That's like death for a devotee, right? Chant Hare Krishna, that's life. So he said, "I have requested them to chant Hare Krishna." So, like a double entendre kind of thing. And then he signed it with his familiar A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So just as we approached the car to leave, Gandhi's granddaughter came and spoke a few words for 5 minutes, and then we left. So Prabhupada went forward to step into the car as I held open the door for him. As he moved forward and he turned around to get in, he said out loud to no one in particular, "Nirvisesha Shunyavadi." And he got in and left. That was his final comment. Just he's lowering himself into the car. "Nirvisesha Shunyavadi." Off we went. Huh? Nirvisesha Shunyavad. That means the Mayavadis. They don't believe that the Supreme Lord has any personal form. When we say our pranam mantras to Srila Prabhupada, that's part of Prabhupada's pranam. It means that Prabhupada came to save us from the Nirvisheshis and the Shunyavadis, nihilists, and people who say that God is nothing. Yeah? That the Absolute is just all-pervasive, intangible nothingness. So that was Prabhupada's mission, to save us from that. When he got back, Prabhupada chatted about the visit, and he said that they can try to keep the tradition, but there is no life, and gradually the whole thing will become useless and it will be finished. Simply on the basis of some sentiment to Gandhi, they are carrying out their rituals, but he said it will not survive. And he noted that there were no young people at the place, only infants and men and women who were old enough to remember Gandhi, and therefore they still had some sentiment. But no young people were there, so they weren't getting their message through. So anyway, that, because there was a whole episode about that, you'll have to wait until Volume 6 comes out to read about the rest of that. But, you know, there was a very, very enlivening meeting the following day. Mahaksha Prabhu was there. When Prabhupada sat in the middle of the whole group, all the people that had been invited, and blasted them, he let them have it. He had all these different points that he'd been writing up the following previous weeks. He had Jagadish sit down and read them out point by point, and then he let rip. He just couldn't, you know, contain himself. We had been sitting in Prabhupada's room waiting for them to call him to the meeting, actually. They'd had some kind of workshop meetings the day before, and Prabhupada wasn't required to go for that. Then they had a general meeting, plenary session, and then they were calling Prabhupada so that they could read back to Prabhupada all the different practical points that they'd come up with for popularizing the Bhagavad Gita, you know, throughout India, and they wanted his, you know, comments on that and any suggestions that he had. But they said, "There's no need for you to come, you know, to the workshop meetings. We'll do that." So Chidananda, he had actually kind of presided over the workshop meetings. You know, he's a, you know, lively guy. He was fired up. So, because Prabhupada wasn't there, he was the, you know, the big man. And then the next morning, when Prabhupada was due to go for the main meeting, when we actually finally were called to go into the meeting, just as Prabhupada arrived, Chidananda stood up and walked out, and he, you know, excused himself. He said, "I have a train to catch," and off he went. He wouldn't stay there whilst Prabhupada was there. And I was sitting, I remember, I observed there was a veranda in front of the room in the building where they were having the meeting, and there were a couple of servants there just hanging out. So when Chidananda came out, they just, you know, they looked at him and they just ignored him. But as soon as Prabhupada came and arrived, stepped out of the car, they immediately stood up and offered the pranams, and, you know, they were all very respectful. I mean, Prabhupada had potency, you know. Anyway, so it just reminded me that when Prabhupada arrived and this guy left, it was a, there's that old saying that, you know, when the lion is absent, the jackal becomes the king of the jungle. But when the lion comes back, the jackals flee. Anyway, Prabhupada went in, he sat down, and then it just, he gave, for half an hour, he just gave him the source. You know, how you can talk about preaching the Bhagavad Gita, you don't even accept that Krishna's, you know, a real person. You don't accept Bhagavad Gita in any sense the way that Arjuna, you know, accepted Krishna. So how can you preach Bhagavad Gita? So even before they got off to anything, Prabhupada told them, you're just not qualified to be here and do what you're proposing to do. So that naturally some of them became very insulted. And one guy, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, there's only one way to understand the Bhagavad Gita. That's the way that Arjuna understood it. They made some proposal that they would start a library and collect every single version of the Bhagavad Gita that's ever been published by anybody, you know, in any language. They would collect it all together and have this big library. And Prabhupada said, you know, what is the use of your speculation? He said, what is the use of so many different editions? There's only one Bhagavad Gita, and that's the way that Arjuna, you know, accepted it. So he said, you cannot give your interpretation. So then one man shouted out, he said, well, you've got your interpretation. What's wrong with anybody else's interpretation? So Prabhupada immediately shot back. He said, it is not interpretation. It is presentation. So then the guy, right, the guy says, well, what's the difference? Interpretation, presentation, it's all the same. So then somebody else said, no, no, he's right, there's a difference, like this. And then there was some woman there, she was probably in the mid-20s, and some other group, another Mayavadi group, so she starts getting annoyed. So she starts jumping in. And Prabhupada really didn't want to hear from her. You know, he just, you know, just keep quiet. I mean, he didn't say it, but the way that he dealt with it was just, you don't know anything, you know, too young, just keep quiet. So she was determined to have her say. So at one point she yelled out, why should we accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's interpretation of Bhagavad Gita? The Prabhupada immediately had her, because he'd never mentioned Lord Chaitanya in the whole time that he'd been speaking. So she was revealing her prejudice. So Prabhupada immediately got her, he said, who said anything about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He said, I never said anything about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm saying what Krishna says. I'm saying what Arjuna says. He said, now don't disturb. Like that. That was it. And then she, he cut her right off. He just turned away and ignored her. Anyway, it was quite lively. And then at the end, you know, Sriman Narayan and Ramakrishna Bajaj, they were also in the room, and they were kind of like panic stricken. You know, the whole meeting that had been going along so nicely, and everybody's, you know the Mayavadis, they're always smiling. Everything's all right, everything's one, yeah, we're all the same, you know. Like this, so it's that kind of mood, you know, nobody wants to disturb anybody, and whatever anybody says, that's fine, you know, it's as good as anything else. Prabhupada just immediately burst the bubble, you know. And so, you know, they're kind of panicking. The whole meeting's going to come and break up in chaos if we're not careful. So then Prabhupada just eased off. You know, he saw that they were getting a little anxious, so he was very merciful. He just kind of eased off. And then he started, you know, talking, you know, in a friendly way. And he kind of let them off the hook a little bit. And then he started making a few jokes. And in the end, he had them all laughing and, you know, very happy again. And then it finished. So that was it. That was the meeting. But before we'd actually entered into the meeting, we were waiting in Prabhupada's room. There was just him and Prabhupada and myself. We were waiting for the call, and it was kind of late. And Prabhupada was sitting there and he started, he just told me very frankly, he said, actually, he said, I would never come here. Said, all these people, just Mayavadis, are all nonsense like this. And he just really criticized them for about half an hour. He said, we don't even want to see their faces, he said. Anyway, that was Prabhupada's mood. He just didn't like to be with the Mayavadis. Right, because they deny the existence of Krishna, and he just couldn't tolerate it. You know. Anyway, so that's a few things, and that was the point. He said, just see, in the whole ashram, he said, not one deity of Krishna has been installed. Gandhi, he calls himself a follower of the Bhagavad Gita, but actually he made a comment. He once said that if Krishna was a person, if Krishna was ever a real person, I will give up my position as a Hindu. And yet he was the big propagator of the Bhagavad Gita. Gandhi actually had no faith in Krishna. And he had no faith even in the Dharma. I read his autobiography, My Search for Truth. And he admits in there, he says, I never go to the so-called holy places. I have no faith in these places. They are not different from any other place. There's nothing special about going to these holy places that pilgrims go to. And I never go there. He made a point. He never went to any dharm. So this was his mentality. Okay. Well, there's a few things left, but we don't have any more time. It's 10 to 9. So we'll continue this evening. We'll finish off this deity module. And we'll probably have time this evening for at least half an hour or so of just general questions and answers. Any quick questions right now? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Why is it that we have Gandhiji for what he says on the back of our Bhagavad Gita?
Well, because he said something favorable about the Gita, so that's fine. That's legitimate, you can use that. Just like Einstein, you know, he was a scientist. But, you know, he said some things to indicate that he believed that God existed. You can use that. Yeah. Sorry. Actually, there's a whole story about that. They claim that because they used to chant Ram Nam in his political meetings, and they claimed that when he was shot, he said "Hey Ram" and died. But it's not true. It was all propaganda. In 47. I was in Manila in the early 80s, about 82 or 83. I was in Manila. We had a temple there. And I just happened to look in an empty cupboard, and there was an old Life magazine. You know, Life. From 1968. So it had been lying in there for about 12 years or something. I pulled it out, and it had an article. It was an interview with Gopal Godse. And this man was one of the conspirators. He had been jailed for 20 years for the murder of Gandhi, and his brother was hanged. So this magazine was just, it was an interview with him on his release from prison. He'd just got out of jail after 20 years. And, you know, they were asking him about his experiences in jail, and did he regret what he'd done in plotting to kill Gandhi? And he said, no, absolutely not. You know, he ruined Hindu culture and this and that. And so, you know, he was a nationalist. But then they asked him specifically that they say that Gandhi, you know, said the name of Ram when he was shot. And he said, absolutely not. He said, I was standing right next to him when my brother shot him. I was only 4 feet away from him. He said, when he was shot, he just gave out a gasp and he fell on the ground and he was dead. And that was it. So that was a bit of propaganda there, actually. But anyway, Prabhupada did say at one point, he said he was a covered personalist. So he had a little something, but he was a covered personalist. That's a Mayavadi, of course. Anyway. Okay, so we'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So 5:30 this evening will be the last session.